Welcome to the Outkick Door Coverage podcast. Remember to follow us on Twitter at Outkick Coverage. Like us on Facebook. If you're listening on iTunes, give us a 5-star rating. And this is an exciting week we've got ahead of us here, Robbie.
Let me just get ahead on this, Nick. You sound excited.
I sound ill, but because yeah. I love the podcast. And I love college football, and I love all of our loyal listeners. We have sucked it up, and I believe we put together a fine show here.
I think we have. I think we did all right for ourselves.
Yeah.
I think that this is probably going to be one of the more exciting weekends in college football, just because you get, and this is just me throwing out a random number, but like 70 to 80% of all the Power 5 teams are in conference play this week. So,
yep, teeth of the conference schedule begins.
It's
pussyfooting around with FCS schools.
Exactly.
That's for before you play your rivalry.
Well, unless you're LSU, who gets to do that. But we'll talk about that later.
We will. Yeah. Let's go ahead and get into the recaps from last week, shall we?
Yeah.
All right. So, UCLA at Arizona. Phoenix, Arizona, put the heat up on
you. I should warn you, the girls as fine as California.
Yeah, I don't think U of A is in. Regardless, Bruins 56, Wildcats 30.
Yeah. It's quite an interesting. It was quite an interesting week for the Pac-12. UCLA at Arizona. I think we all had really high hopes for this game that it would be a little bit closer than it was. Josh Rosen played a heck of a game. 19 for 28, 284 yards and 2 touchdowns. He was getting it done big time. The Rosen one, the freshman sensation. I don't think anyone's really calling him a Heisman yet, but it seems like he is pulling UCLA out of the fire of the Pac-12. Haven't really heard them toss around as a dominant name in over a decade, I feel. But I think that especially next offseason, you're going to hear his name tossed around a lot when it comes to preseason Heisman. By the end of the year, heck, he may be a freshman that wins it this year. You never know. If they keep playing the way they're playing, he was calm and poised, made some great passes, and he made them perfectly right where they needed to be. Granted, he does have some very good wide receivers on his team, but he was delivering some passes you wouldn't expect a freshman to make, including that beautiful touchdown pass to Jordan Payton in the end zone in the second quarter. Look, it was a beautiful fade pass down to it went right over the defender's hands. Some fifth-year seniors can't even make those passes, and I'm just going to go ahead and say about Josh Rosen, we're probably going to say goodbye to him in his junior year. He's not going to be one of those guys that sticks around for his freshman year. Somebody's going to eat him up in the NFLs. Running the ball for UCLA, Paul Perkins, 24 rushes for only 85 yards. Doesn't seem like it should be. It seems like it should have been a higher number. He had 3 touchdowns on the game, but he didn't have as many yards because he was also sharing with. And I honest to goodness heard his name 100 times. I don't know if I say it right, but Soso Jumabo. I have no idea how to say his name, Nick. But
dude, I love it.
He ran the ball 9 times and got 96 yards out of it. That was pretty baller. And if we look at the other side at Arizona, Anu Solomon, he was only 4 for 10 for 55 yards and 1 touchdown. And he split time with Jared Randall, who went 4 for 6 with 45 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. The game was never even close for Arizona. You heard the stats. The Wildcats changing out QBs. They really...
Well, Anu Solomon was hurt. He was...
I'm sorry. He was hurt. I'm sorry. Yeah. When I say split time, I mean...
Regardless, though, that was a problem for them.
Exactly. And But I will say that they were running the ball very well. They put up 350 yards on the ground as a team. But the defense just could not find a way to stop that nice, almost balanced attack from UCLA, even though Scooby Wright was back, and they missed a lot of sure tackles. Jim Mora is now 3-0 against Arizona as UCLA's head coach. And it's also worth noting that even though Scooby Wright was back for the game, the reports are now that he's hurt again. So
done for the season, I believe.
Done for the season.
Which is a damn shame because he is a heck of a football player. When it came to predictions, Rob got this one right, bruh. And I was wrong.
Can't go against the Rosen one, bruh.
An important lesson we all learned in week four. So yeah, like you said, UCLA came out, put their foot on the gas from the start, didn't really let up. It's 42-14 by half. And you mentioned a new Solomon leaving the game due to injury. But that doesn't really excuse giving up 56 at home. I thought with a couple of losses on the defensive side of the ball and the Bruins coming off a tough game against BYU that might struggle a little bit. Nope, not even a little bit. And I think they look pretty good out there in the Pac-12, Rob. We'll have to wait and see how that conference shakes out. But they might be conference title contenders.
Absolutely.
From November. So.
Absolutely.
Another Pac-12 game for you. USC at Arizona State. Final, Trojans 42, Sun Devils 14.
Yeah, if I've ever seen a more lopsided game of suspected Titans, I don't remember it because USC did so well in this game that it did put me to sleep. I was asleep. I'm pretty sure it was like midnight because I'm sleep dough. I mean, couldn't stay up for this one. Just was not entertaining enough to stay up for, even though I did get to see two or three of Cody Kessler's five touchdowns in the game. And he threw for 375 yards in the game, and he had a pick. Everyone really thought that Arizona State's Mike Bercovici was really on that path to stardom. You know, he had a great name. Good-looking kid, looked like a quarterback in my opinion.
Indeed.
But you know, only throwing 52% of your passes against. I don't care if it's the worst USC team you've ever played, but you're gonna lose if you're only throwing 52% against them. And Arizona State seemed to just come out flat and unwilling to play a USC team that just lost to Stanford. Perhaps they were ill-prepared, or maybe it was just that it was the perfect matchup for USC, but, you know, USC looked like a playoff contender from what I saw, especially when against Arizona State.
Yeah, and it's still early enough in the year for them to rebound from that Stanford loss. I think a one-loss conference champion USC would definitely be in the playoff. Again, Rob, on this one, you were right, and I was wrong in terms of predictions. Two for two, buddy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, geez, whole state of Arizona. Do you guys just not want to play college football last weekend? I was pretty high on Arizona State, and so were a lot of other analysts. I believe Herbie picked them to beat USC after the Trojans failed to impress against Stanford. But instead, Sun Devils came out and just got their doors blown off, much in the same way that Arizona did. I think this kind of goes for both the Arizona schools. The reason that people thought that the Wildcats and Sun Devils might make some noise this year is because they seem to be on the rise after some pretty big seasons last year. I mean, Arizona finished in the top half of the polls, and I think they were at the tail end of the top 10 at the end of last year. But c'est la vie. This is why we play the games, right, Rob?
Oh, yeah.
Moving along, more Pac-12 action for you from last weekend. Utah at Oregon. Utah, 62. Ducks, 20. I'll say it again. Utes, 62. Ducks, 20.
Wait,
Rob,
did I just say that last game was a lopsided affair?
You did indeed.
Wait, I have seen a more lopsided affair. It was this game. Utah. Utah over Oregon? Okay, first of all, we in this day and age, people have come to expect Oregon to win this game. Some people picked Utah. But I don't think anybody in the country picked by 42 points. And if you did, you better have put money on it. And now you're buying everybody in the collective universe beers because you were alone. I mean, come on, this was ridiculous. And it was. Oregon lost so bad in this game that they dropped out of the top 25 for the first time since 2009. Yikes. After going 2-for-7, Vernon Adams was replaced by Jeff Locke, who also managed to fizzle under the weighty pressure of the Utes. And I really enjoyed this game. Utah played outstandingly, and they brought the trick plays, which is one of my favorite kinds of college football. They ran a first down on a fake punt when they were up, I think, by like 20-something points.
I saw that. That was fantastic.
Exactly. And then one of their touchdowns came by way of, and I'm trying to find the words for this because I have no idea, but a fake catch.
The fake out on the punt return. Right. One guy kind of called it like he was getting it, and the other guy on the other side of the field caught it and basically just ran it back.
Absolutely. The Fox cameraman was even following the fake catch for a little while, and all of a sudden you look to the opposite side of the field and there's Booby Hobbs, which is a pretty great name, running down the sideline, returns at 69 yards for the score. And again, I don't know if this play, like that scheme of play really has a name yet, but all I wanted to hear the commentator saying was, it's everybody looking at the sky going, it's a bird, it's a plane. Oh, wait, it's going the other way.
Oh, I love that. That's fantastic. Rob, you were right again on this one.
You got it, dude.
3-for-3 in the Pac-12 game.
I never would have guessed by 42 points, though, Nick. Let's not give me too much credit.
A lot of smart folks gave Utah a chance, but I don't think anyone saw that margin of victory. Those are the kind of beatings that the Ducks are normally doling out in the Pac-12. The Utah defense is good. They only give up 18.8 points per game. And I don't want to take anything away from them, but I think Oregon is the story here. They got questions at quarterback and almost no defense to speak of. I think they're in trouble. And I think things might get worse for them before they get better. A couple more games to recap extensively, and then we'll get into the week 5 preview. Tennessee at Florida. Florida 28, Tennessee 27.
Brown. Yeah, I know you didn't like this one, Nick, being the nice FSU fan that you are, but you know, at one point Tennessee looked like they were going to put Florida away. if anyone can tell you anything about a well-recruited young team, it's that they usually can't figure out how to finish a game in the fourth quarter. And Tennessee let a 20-7 third quarter lead go. Florida's Will Greer completes the pass to Antonio Callaway, who jukes, jives, and turns to take it 63 yards for a score near the end of the game to give Florida the one-point lead that Tennessee just cannot make up in time.
Balls fans, I don't know what to tell you. If you watch the game, Josh Dobbs and Jalen Hurd were very good, each with over 100 yards on the ground, very physical against a very tough Florida defense. Thought the double pass play call was phenomenal. I think that's the kind of things you got to do if you want to take it to the opponent on the road in the SEC. Did everything right until about the last 90 seconds when he gave up that touchdown that Robbie just mentioned on a 4th and 14. That is inexcusable. You cannot give up a 63-yard touchdown on a 4th and 14 in the last 90 seconds of a football game. You're right there, Tennessee. You couldn't finish the game. Going to be a problem if that trend continues. I feel like that it's a scene in Top Gun where Sundown is yelling at Maverick, "Hey, Mav, we could have had him, man. We could have had him, Mav. We could have had him, Tennessee. But you got to start finishing some football games. It's already happened to you once with Oklahoma." And, Rob, I got one.
Hey,
I got one right.
Good
job. I thought Florida's defense would bow up. If you ain't bowing up, you ain't bowing up. Thought they'd bow up and take it to Tennessee, but it really is Florida's offense in the end that made the big play. So TCU at Texas Tech, TCU 55. Red Raiders 52 on the tip drill, Rob. What happened in this one?
Yeah, you know, I have to say this was a very fun game to watch. I was actually texting you, Nick.
Yep.
You were just
leaving.
I was leaving
at dinner with the wife.
Yep.
Yep. We were just leaving the restaurant, and on the way back, I think the restaurant had that game on. No, they had some crappy SEC game on.
But
it was Mizzou. Who did Mizzou lose to this weekend? Kentucky, right?
Yeah.
That was the game that was on.
And so I had to text Nick to make sure he was watching this one, because this is one that probably could have slipped by a lot of people's radar. I think last week this wasn't a game we really even previewed.
Right.
But it was I think we did a little bit, but not terribly too in-depth. It was a very close game throughout the entire game, it seemed. Texas Tech hanging in really until that last drive. TCU, they led TCU by like 4 points. And TCU drives down to the 4-yard line. And I think it's at this point that I was like furiously texting Nick.
Yes.
And I'm saying, oh my gosh, Nick, it's second down and there's so-and-so time left. And oh my goodness, oh, it's third down. Oh my gosh, it's fourth down. Yes, it was fourth down on the 4-yard line with 23 seconds remaining. TCU has the ball. Trevon Boykin passes into the end zone, and you got a sweet tip drill reflected into the hands of Aaron Green, who caught the ball 1 foot down, and Aaron Green is going to haunt the dark mind of Texas Tech coach Cliff Kingsbury for a whole another year.
Yeah, I felt bad for Coach Hansom losing on the tip drill like that, but that was a particularly entertaining game. I caught the tail end of that one, thanks to you urging me to get to a television. Curious thing about this one is that the TCU defense, the 4-2-5 they play, is pretty much designed to stop the offense that Texas Tech is running, and it did a pretty sorry job of that. So I'll almost always take TCU in a shootout, but that defense is going to have to tighten up if they want to command the Big 12 this season. All right, other scores of note, very, very quickly. Mississippi State at Auburn. Mississippi State wins that one 17-9.
Yeah, Auburn's giant video board could not stop Dak Prescott.
Auburn more like Lauburn. Louisiana Monroe at Alabama.
Yeah, Alabama
34-0 tied.
Yeah, Alabama pitches the shutout in this revenge game, looking back to 2007 when Louisiana Monroe beat Nick Saban in his first year at Alabama.
And we all know revenge is a dish best served cold. Jeez. Texas A&M at Arkansas. Well, kind of at Arkansas. They were in Jerry World. Aggies 28-21 in overtime.
Yeah, Brett Bielema is kind of quiet after that game, after Cliff Kingsbury's prediction comes true. Ooh, the handsome curse is what I'm going to call it.
The handsome curse. Oh, I love that. Keeps getting worse for Bielema. Razorbacks are on the road against a pretty desperate Tennessee team. Vols are a 6-point favorite in that one this weekend. LSU at Syracuse. LSU 34, Orange 24.
Yeah, Leonard Fournette squeezes the Orange. He now has 631 yards in 3 games and 8 touchdowns. And if you saw the game, you remember that amazing bailout play where Brandon Harrison's going down. It looks like a sack, and Leonard Fournette's back there going, just give me the ball, man. Just give me the ball. He shovel past the ball over to Leonard. These are things you're going to see the rest of the season, because that's going to be his Heisman reel. Because when he wins the Heisman,
that guy.
Eventually.
Yep. And if you're Syracuse, you played LSU really tough. Yes, I don't think the game was ever really in doubt, but you couldn't quite bottle up Fournette, but really, who can? But that a 10-point loss to a top 10 team is nothing to be ashamed of.
Nope.
OK State at Texas. Cowboys win this one 30-27.
Charlie tried to be strong against the Cowboys. That's all.
There were some complaints about the officiating in this one by Texas fans, but takes solace in the fact that you're the most creative team in the country, Texas. You keep finding new ways to lose.
Yes, you do.
If you could just hit an extra point or execute a punt, might have a much different record right now. BYU at Michigan. Wolverines 31. Cougs nothing.
Yeah, the
Wolverines.
Or I'm going to give them a new name, the Cacarines, as in the khaki pants. Does that work? That doesn't really work. Anyway, the Latter-day Saint was no match for those Cacarines.
Yeah, Cougars just looked gassed after a tough 2 weeks. It's not that they weren't trying, but they just didn't physically have the energy. And then traveling across country to Ann Arbor, Michigan just Big Ten in the death. They just ran the ball straight at them. Both of us picked BYU in that one. Rob, both wrong.
Yes, indeed. And there's something new we want to introduce this week before we get to our week five look ahead. I'm not going to put this on Nick because it may be the dumbest thing you've ever heard in your entire life, but I came up with my own little ranking scheme that I want to call the Outkicked Our Coverage Table. Yeah, a table, like fair rankings. Is anyone else out there just bleeding upset that Ohio State's still ranked number one?
I actually am pretty upset about that.
I'm pretty upset really too. Let's look at Ohio State's first four games. A 42-24 win over Virginia Tech.
It was without their starting quarterback in the second half.
Yeah, very, very true. Very true.
And they were losing that game at halftime.
Yes, and they played and beat Hawaii pretty handily, sure, but it's Hawaii. Northern Illinois, they beat them 20-13, and then Western Michigan, they beat them 38-12. I think that a lot of the voters out there have a lot of expectations of these teams, and they're looking at these teams going, oh, well, Ohio State won last year, so therefore, until they lose, they're going to be the best. No, I think that's baloney nuggets, is what I think that is.
Ooh, baloney nuggets.
I think that teams need to be
fired up now.
Yeah, they need to be ranked based on what they have actually done. And so what I've devised is a ranking system for each win and loss. There's no expectations. There's no, there's weight put on the games based on who you're playing, but it's who you're playing based on what conference they're in. So we split this up into Power 5, Group of 5, and FCS. And I'm including BYU and Notre Dame in with the Group of 5, right? So, I don't know. I just feel like I should.
Yeah, you are.
And so if you're playing a Power 5, if you beat a Power 5 team, you get 3 points. You beat a Group of 5 team, you get 1 point. And if you beat an FCS team, you don't get any points because those are the only games where you're expected to win.
Yeah.
If you lose to a Power 5 team, you just go to zero. So it's basically the same as winning against an FCS team. You lose to a Group of 5 team, it's minus 1 point, and you lose to an FCS team, it's minus 3 points. So you take all these and you add them up over the season and you divide by the number of games you play, because you have to do it that way because there are certain teams that only play a certain number of games. They don't play that last game, and other teams that end up playing more games throughout the season. And so far, once I've done this, let me read you my top, 5, 10, whatever. Standing at number one in my first ever Outkicked Our Coverage table, we have LSU, who is averaging 3 because they've beaten 3 Power 5 opponents in their only 3 games. So that makes sense. So far sitting at number 2 is Notre Dame. And if you look at their resume so far, you gotta be impressed. And if they win over Clemson this weekend, you gotta be even more impressed with them. I just have a hard time knocking Notre Dame right now, even with all the injuries they've had. And
playing well, yeah.
They're playing really well. Gotta like them. They're sitting at a 2.5, and then they're tied with UCLA, who's also at a 2.5. So in terms of the top 3, I think it's totally worked out so far. Just saying. Yes. Tied at 4th place are 3 teams, Florida, Texas A&M, and Utah. Now, again, it's early in the season, so the averages will average out over the rest of the season. But through the first 4 games, you've got – I don't know if Florida's really going to hang in there, but I think Utah looks good in that position. And just rounding out the top 10, California – Georgia, Iowa, Kentucky, and then tied with those guys also is Michigan, Northwestern, Ole Miss, Stanford, and TCU. A lot of ties, I know, because you're doing a lot of averages, but it's something that I want to play with for the rest of the season. And so I'm going to give you what my rankings are in comparison to like the AP poll over the course of the season, just to see if this is something that might actually work, because I think all of us as college football fans, we get so upset with emotions and feelings going into where these reporters and these AP people, or you know, the members of the Associated Press, are ranking these teams. You get people who hate SEC teams who will never vote an SEC team number one. You got people who hate Notre Dame that are never going to put Notre Dame at number one. And so if you're taking out the equation of expectation and emotion and do nothing but pure what have you done, what are your games. Now, in the event of a tie, to do a tiebreaker, and we'll do this later, not right now, you would just take what the average point total of the opponents that they've had throughout the season are, and the one with the highest one is the best, because they've played the teams with the best standout. So that was my little explanation, all to say, now we're going to talk about week 5, Nick.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Touchdown Jesus. This is a fantastic week of college football.
Yes. And to start off, we're going to talk about number 23, West Virginia, and number 15, Oklahoma. That's at noon on Fox Sports 1. West Virginia in my rankings is ranked number 35. I don't know where Oklahoma's at because I didn't have them ready to go, but they're I don't know if I even said them earlier, but oh, there they are, 17.
They're in there.
So, it's, you know, that's my ranking anyway.
All right. My godmother lives in Clarksburg, West Virginia, so I have a little Mountaineers hat from when I was probably 7 or 8 years old. So I've always kind of had a bit of a soft spot for West Virginia. Plus, they go absolutely bonkers when they win a big game, and I have to admire their passion. The Mountaineers have quietly been pretty good this season. Shut out Georgia Southern's option attack in week 1, dismantled Liberty in week 2, as you should, and then gave Maryland the business last week, whooping up on the Terps 45-6. Skylar Howard at quarterback already has 9 TDs, just 1 pick this year, and the defense has only given up 23 total points in the first 3 weeks of the season. In the first 3 games that they've played. We are in week 5 now. Oklahoma will be at home for this one. Baker Mayfield has been sensational, already over 1,000 yards, 10 TDs, 2 picks. Oklahoma struggled against Tennessee, though, and I think this is a better Mountaineers team than Tennessee. I'll take West Virginia and that potent Dana Holgorsen offense to pull off the upset in Soonerville. I couldn't think of the name of the town. It's Norman. Norman, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
You're going to lose this weekend. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you on that. I think I'd take West Virginia. I think that when you look at their schedule, West Virginia probably has the hardest October than anyone else in college football. They, got 3 away games against ranked teams, and none of them are sequential, luckily for them, but it's going to be a rough one. And then when you look at the overall scheme of the Big 12, this may even be the winner. We might be seeing one of these two teams as the winner of the Big 12, just with the way that West Virginia is playing. But then again, I think that the Big 12 is probably going to eat itself alive and probably have lots of 2 losses.
Yeah, I think that Mountaineers defense is sneaky good. We'll Absolutely. Find out on Saturday. But you said the rest of their October is pretty tough. This is the rest of West Virginia's October. Versus Oklahoma State at home. That's number 20, Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm.
At Baylor, and then at TCU.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's going to be rough, guys. best of luck with that one. Hey, but if they can come out of that stretch unscathed, they can win the whole dang conference, man. College football is great.
Absolutely, especially when you think about Iowa playing at number 19, Wisconsin. I know that's a great segue, right?
Great games. I think Iowa, Wisconsin.
This is why I want to hear your take on this game, Nick. It's going to be at noon on ESPN, and Quietly so. Iowa undefeated this year. That's not to say that it's just that it's Iowa and we all think they're so bad, but they're undefeated four games into the season, and I'm just saying, like, there's got to be something going on right there, Nick.
Right. Who's ready for some big, dumb Big Ten football?
Yeah.
Because that is exactly what you're going to get. It's exactly what you're going to get if you tune in to ESPN at noon. Two teams with very physical styles. Two teams with quarterbacks that are playing pretty well. CJ Beathard for the Hawkeyes currently has a QB rating of 157.8, 962 yards, 6 TDs, just one pick. I believe I heard he's the most efficient quarterback in the Big Ten. On the other sideline, you got old Joel Stave. He's having a pretty nice year, but I think the difference in this one is going to be Wisconsin's defense, who has not given up a touchdown since the Bama game. Plus, this one's in Camp Randall, pretty rowdy place to play. I think Wisconsin is going to win this one. It's going to be a dogfight in the trenches. So if you like kind of the old style of the SEC, the way 10 has been, 10 has like been for like 50. Watch two teams just line them up and run right at each other. Well, then this is your game this weekend. Badgers at home.
I think I'll have to agree. I think I'll have to take Wisconsin also. Yeah. Yep.
Whiskey.
Yep. Taking whiskey. Which leads us.
Drinking whiskey watching that one.
Yeah, man. That's a good idea. Let's do a whiskey watching whiskey game. That takes me to the next conference that I want to talk about, the ACC, number 11 Florida State playing at Wake Forest. I couldn't leave Florida State out of this, seeing as how they had a week off. They are ranked, again, number 11 in the AP poll. Wake Forest is unranked, whereas in my Outkick to our coverage table, Florida State's ranked there at number 16th with a 1.6. I'm pretty sure Wake Forest is like 59th, and that's again,
that's
with
what I'm looking at. Yep.
It's pretty bad, and I'm only really ranking Power Five teams. I haven't even gotten into the Group Five just yet, so that's just imagine with another 60, 70 teams sprinkled in there, how many more spaces Wake Forest would go down?
How much lower Wake Forest would be?
Yeah, man.
Right, so thanks to Hurricane Joaquin Phoenix, the forecast for Saturday's game is rain, more rain with a side of rain. And I think that plays right in the Florida State's hands. They got a pretty good stable of running backs in Dalvin Cook and Mario Pender. They're playing much better defense this year than they were last year. Maybe not statistically, but just in terms of effort and flaunting the football. And Wake Forest likes to throw the ball. Demon Deacons are 25th in the country in passing offense, are already over 150 attempts this season, averaging about 300 yards a game. And I think it'll be awfully tough to air it out with the weather being the way it's going to be on Saturday. Plus, just quite simply, Florida State is a much, much, much more talented football team. I think Florida State wins that one by a lot. A lot, a lot, a lot.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree. I think that all you have to say is that Dalvin Cook is going to beat Wake Forest. I think if you just stop it, Dalvin Cook, you're probably won the argument. Now, Nick, you and I have to disagree on something, so we'll see after this next one. Now we're going to move to the SEC, where you've got number 3 Ole Miss at 25 Florida. I have Florida tied for 4th place, and I have Ole Miss tied for 7th place, technically. So, really, it... In terms of that, it should be a pretty good game. This is going to be on 7 o'clock on ESPN.
Yeah, so neither of these teams played particularly well last week. Florida needed a Vatican-certified miracle to come back against Tennessee, and Ole Miss, for all intents and purposes, looked hungover from the Bama game, starting slow against a pretty terrible Vanderbilt team. And how did the Gators sneak up into the top 25 after beating mediocre Tennessee? Here's a stat for you. Florida's average margin of victory against FBS opposition this year, 4 points. Beat East Carolina by 7, Kentucky by 5, and Tennessee by 1. I don't think that's going to cut it against Chad Kelly, Laquon Treadwell, and the brothers Kim Dicci. I'm going to take Ole Miss to spoil the party in the swamp.
Okay, I have to do something here because I saw it earlier, but just bear with me, Nick. I'm talking to my Siri on my phone. Hold on 1 second. Who is the worst team in college football?
Florida is in last place in college football.
Now, Siri's only talking about the top 25, but it's really funny because if you say who's the worst team in college football, Siri says Florida is in last place in college football. So I'm going to have to agree with you again, Nick, and say Ole Miss on this one, just because of Siri. Like, I have no other reason. No, yeah, I do have a lot. I have a lot of other reasons, but Siri's pretty smart for a robot.
that's a pretty good one.
All right, now.
Also, did you see this week? Sorry, quick aside. Did you see this week? It was the anniversary of the promise after Florida lost to Ole Miss in 2008, and Tebow made the promise.
Yeah,
hopefully we don't have one of those situations. McElwain making the promise after
3 minutes for the rest of our lives. 30 minutes for the rest of our lives. Well, maybe you and I will disagree on a game this time, Nick. We're going to talk about 21 Mississippi State at number 14 Texas A&M, which is 7:30 on the SEC Network. Mississippi State sitting.
After you, sir.
Excuse me. I have to introduce my table, Nick. I got to do this.
Dude, sell the table.
Mississippi State sitting at number 30. Texas A&M sitting at tied for fourth place with Florida. So my table thinks Mississippi State isn't quite as good, but.
Yeah, so I haven't had the pleasure of seeing Texas A&M play since week one, but this matchup might be enough for me to upgrade my Sling TV package so that I can watch this one on the SEC Network. And if you would like to sponsor us, Sling TV, that would be excellent.
Or SEC Network, you know, you can too.
All right, yeah, SEC Network.
Give us money.
Well, yeah, throw our podcast on your website. Throw us a little change, it'll be fine. Simply put, though, I think Texas A&M has too many weapons to not win this football game. Kyle Allen has improved since the start of the season. If he's not going, Kyler Murray gets subbed in. He has proven that he can step in with a flash of speed and run circles around defenses. One of the quickest dudes in open space that I've seen in a long, long time. Christian Kirk at wideout has been impressive thus far. On the other side of the ball, they've got Myles Garrett, who's going to have Dak Prescott running for his life. This one's at Kyle Field, and Mississippi State hasn't really been able to get a lot going on the ground. I'm going to take the Aggies.
I think I'm going to have to agree. We'll agree again. I think that Texas A&M, again, like you said, too many weapons. I don't know what Kevin Sumlin is sprinkling in his promises, but nailing down these five-star quarterbacks is kind of awesome. And just as a side note, as a talk on Texas A&M, it's going to be real interesting by the time Kyle Allen can declare for the draft to see if he actually does, because you know with Kyler Murray sitting there behind him, he's going, I'd like to play a little more, coach. Can I be your man? But for some reason, all these guys are gung-ho Aggies and sticking with it. None of them are even, I'm sure, not even thinking about a transfer or anything. But good job to Kevin Sumlin on his recruiting. You're doing a heck of a job, dude. Next, we got number 6, Notre Dame at number 12, Clemson. That is an 8 o'clock game on ABC. The Outkicked Our Coverage table has Notre Dame ranked number 2 and Clemson ranked number 21, and this game has, I think, humongous implications for the playoffs, Nick.
I would agree. Notre Dame, definitely undefeated Notre Dame, with their strength of schedule, can make the playoff. Mm-hmm. Clemson, the time is now for you, my friends. The ACC is wide open this year, and I don't think it will be for a long time coming. The way Florida State's recruiting and the way some of the other schools in the conference are improving. Robbie, are you familiar with the term Clemsoning?
I think I am, Nick, but yeah. I don't know if everyone else is.
Never a good thing when your school has become synonymous with choking in big spots. Listeners, if you're not familiar with the term Clemsoning, if you were, I'd say, up 14 in the fourth quarter and somehow blew a game, that would be Clemsoning. Or if you finally made it to a major bowl game and had 70 dropped on you by a West Virginia team, that would be Clemsoning. Yes, the Tigers are 3-0 this year, but they're only game against a Power 5 school. They squeaked by with a three-point win over a now 1-3 Louisville Cardinal team. After losing a ton of talent in defense, though, the Tigers are playing pretty well on that side of the ball, giving up just 12.3 points per game. Good for 11th in the nation. I went back and watched some of the game tape because, if you're not aware, you can pretty much just Google any game that has happened in the past weekend, and there are guys putting the whole game online on YouTube.
Yeah.
So if you ever miss something, listeners, and you want to go back and do a little analysis yourself,
they're the real heroes. They're
the real MVPs.
Yes, they are.
So I went back and watched Deshaun Watson. Not as good as I thought he'd be at this point in the year, but he's still athletic as hell. As for Notre Dame, Deshaun Kizer, quarterback, CJ Procise at running back, one of the better defenses in the country, although if you look at the numbers, they don't show it. Clemson is technically ranked higher, but Notre Dame has already played and defeated three Power 5 schools, whereas Clemson has only beaten one by a field goal. I just don't trust Clemson in a big spot yet. Even if it is in Death Valley at night, I think Notre Dame has found a way thus far this season, and I think they will find a way again on Saturday. I'll take Notre Dame in a really, really close game.
I'm going to have to say not so fast, my friend. I think I'm going to take Clemson on this. I think Notre Dame has just got too many key injuries that I think are going to take their toll. I think, you know, you mentioned Clemsoning. I think this is a year where we're not going to see as much Clemsoning happening. And I think they're going to get over this hump. I think Dabo's going to take them to out of Death Valley and into the promised land. I do have a question
as long
for you.
He doesn't whip or nene, that's fine.
Yeah, he could stop. He could stop dancing anytime. That would be great.
Yeah.
I do have a hypothetical for you, Nick, that I would like answered.
Lay it on me, Rob.
Let's say Florida State finishes out the season undefeated.
Yes.
They do not play against Notre Dame this year, correct?
Correct.
They do not. Now, Notre Dame finishes out the season undefeated. They defeat Clemson and they go on undefeated. Would you say that it's kind of weird that you would have Notre Dame, who plays mostly an ACC schedule, would they be fighting for a spot with FSU for the playoff? Or do you think that both teams have enough of a separate resume that they should both be considered individually and not as maybe two ACC schools in the playoff? Because I know the playoff committee probably won't like that.
Right. So, I think it kind of depends on the other teams that are there.
Mm-hmm. True.
Obviously. I think if you exclude an undefeated Power 5 conference champion, you're going to have some uproar, some outrage in that. I think if two spots were open and those were the last two teams left, I'd put both of them in. I think Notre Dame's schedule is really, really tough. And if they come out of that unscathed, even if they don't play a conference championship game, they deserve to play for a national title. That could be a national semifinal come December, Rob. Notre Dame, Florida State, never know.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's get to our game of the week. Alabama, number 13, Bama, at number 8, Georgia, 3:30 Eastern on CBS. Rob.
The table has this game ranked. Alabama is number 23, and Georgia. Wow, that was weird. My computer jumped. Anyways, Georgia is at number 8, right where they are in the AP. So this game seems pretty good. I don't know. It seems like it'd be pretty good. Two stories in this game, and here's the first one: Alabama's defense versus Georgia's offense. I know that sounds pretty like duh, but you got to hear it out here. If Alabama could pick what kind of defense it wanted, or I'm sorry, what kind of offense it wanted to play every single week, it would pick the style that Georgia plays. The style that Georgia plays, if you don't know, is called hand the ball to Chubb. That's what I've named their offense. And Alabama's defense loves these one star games, meaning, you know, the team basically just has one big star on the team, especially when he's the running back. Alabama ranked 4th in the country in rush defense, and they're only allowing 227 yards through 4 games on the ground and with 115 attempts against them. And they're averaging against them 2 yards per rush. And this year, they've only allowed 2 rushing touchdowns in their 4 games. That's even against that high-scoring game against Ole Miss, you'll remember. Nick Chubb, 5th in the country with 599 yards in 4 games and 6 touchdowns. He's averaging about 8.5 yards a carry. I think that the story of the stats is going to tell me that Alabama's defense is going to hold up very well against Georgia's offense. Whereas on the other side of the ball, we have a completely different story, which is my second point. Alabama's offense versus Georgia's defense. Again, sounds elementary, I know. 24th ranked defense that Georgia brings will be looking to stop Alabama on the run. I'm guessing that Nick Saban probably decided that Lane Kiffin probably needs to run the dang ball. That's where they've had their biggest success this year. And I know that we're all excited about Derrick Henry and Kenyon Drake, but now Alabama gets a new weapon this week in Bo Scarborough. Bo Scarborough was a 5-star running back who was suspended by the NCAA for the first 4 games of the season for some reason, maybe related to amateurism. They haven't actually said, but the best thing that the NCAA has come out and told everybody is amateurism. He's been an added bonus, or he will be an added bonus, rather, that Alabama has needed, especially for Kenyon Drake, who's on the field for, it seems like, 70% of the plays. He's playing at H-back, he's playing at running back, he's playing at wide receiver. And then Derrick Henry's on the field about half the time. Adding that third, really good third running back that the coaches did nothing but coo over in practice, I think is going to add another layer of depth to Alabama this week, and I think we're really going to get to see it. We're going to get to see a different rushing team maybe this week. So overall, I think Alabama's going to hold Nick Chubb. And then the question comes to what kind of offense we're going to see against Georgia. But overall, it's going to be a defensive battle. It's going to be pretty low scoring. I think Alabama will come out on top, but only because I think they'll be able to move the ball on the ground a little bit better than Georgia will with Georgia's style of offense. But you may disagree with me, Nick.
We'll get to that. first of all, this is one of those games that just lets you know that you're in the loving embrace of college football season. This is a great early October conference game. All of the kind of messing around in September is over. So let's get to talking about it. Georgia, Nick Chubb has more rushing attempts than quarterback Grayson Lambert has passing attempts. But if you got a stud in the stable, I say run him. That is not to say, though, that Georgia cannot throw the ball. They just really haven't had to. Lambert is completing north of 75% of his passes. I think it was 76-point-something% of his passes, and has yet to throw a pick this season. Bama's offense has been in a bit of disarray, as you mentioned, over the past couple weeks. Seems like that with that stable of backs, you hand it off more, but that's... I ain't calling the plays. the defenses are pretty comparable. Bama has only given up 267 yards a game, Georgia 273. I think this one's going to come down to quarterback play because both defensive fronts are stout. I think, you know, Derrick Henry will struggle, as will Nick Chubb, to get going. It'll be a battle in the trenches, but at some point, someone is going to have to step into the pocket and deliver the ball downfield. And right now, I trust Grayson Lambert more than anyone Bama has trotted out at quarterback. It's going to be very, very close, but I'm going to say dogs by a field goal.
Woo.
In Athens between the hedges.
And just a reminder, the last time Alabama actually played Georgia, I believe, was 2 years ago, maybe two, 3 years ago. Maybe it was 3 years ago in an SEC championship game, and that was where
Georgia came down to the last play,
mismanaged the clock, threw a short ball. He went down, no timeouts, 5 seconds left, clock ran out. Boom. And before that, the last time Alabama had played in Athens, it was Georgia's blackout game, and Alabama curb stomped them. There have been there were a lot of fake reports that was saying, "Hey Georgia, you need to make sure you're wearing black this week against Bama." No, Georgia's wearing red this week. We're not going to worry about that. They're wearing red. But yeah, I think it's going to be a really good game. I think this is one of those games that you look forward to when you see it on paper in the beginning of the season. It's one of those big games at the near the front of the season that you finally, like you said, you get the teeth of the football season, Nick.
Yes, we are in it now.
All right. Well, we also want to say congratulations to our Outkicked Our Coverage Coach of the Week, to which I named Charlie Strong as the Coach of the Week. Now, let's be real here. He's not a bad-looking dude, but the way his team's been playing, I'm going to go ahead and say you're lucky to have Victoria Strong. Let's just put it that way. Who's a fine-looking lady. Oh, the dog's barking. Well, we're almost done, sweetheart. We're almost done. I know. Charlie Strong is not an ugly dude. Don't have to tell me. Gosh. All right. Nick, what are we talking about next week?
That will be week 6.
Oh, yeah.
I have looked at the slate of games yet, but I'm sure they're great, and you should listen next week.
Absolutely.
Because we are awesome.
Absolutely, and be sure to check us out on Facebook at Outkicked Our Coverage. There's our Twitter account, which we love, at Outkick Coverage. You can email us at outkickedourcoverage@gmail.com. Tell us what you think of the table, because I'm interested in if you think that I'm an idiot and should never mention it again. Nick, should they go to the website?
Not yet.
Not yet? You know, maybe.
But I'm messing around over there. Yeah.
Maybe we can post the full Power 5 plus BYU plus Notre Dame plus. Oh, I actually put Boise in there too. We can put the full table on there maybe, and everyone can look at that and see the whole thing. How about that? Or you can send us some smoke signals if you want to. And remember to always outkick your coverage every day. And if you haven't locked it down by midnight, it's not worth it. We will talk to you next week, folks.
Enjoy your football, everybody.